The Truck and Driver podcast is sponsored by Fortune Tires, who manufacture high-quality, durable tires designed for operators who are looking for exceptional value across every application. Fortune Tires is proud to partner with International Tires, the exclusive distributor of their truck tires in the UK. For more info, visit internationaltires.com/fortune or call 0121 552 6888. Drive forward with Fortune Tires. Hello there and welcome back to another episode of the Truck and Driver podcast. I'm editor at large, Doogie Rankin, and I'm joined by Team Truck and Driver contributor,
Matt Ireland.
Matt, how are you? It's not that been long since I caught up with you, but it feels like a bit of a long time. September's been a busy old month. Gather, you're just back from, you had the retro show at the start of the month and then Swedefest to tie it off at the end.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose we should just say apologies to the listener for the gap that we've had, but we've just been both been just so busy. I mean, I've been trying to arrange with a few people, a few different podcasts, and it's just nothing's just kind of worked. Like you say, I had the fantastic retro show, then I was away, I think, the following weekend on scuba diving holiday. Then the weekend after that was the Grand Henham Steam Rally, which is local to me, which is always fantastic. There's a few trucks there, not a great deal, but they always have a little parade. And then the weekend that has just gone, as we record this, yes, was the equally as fantastic as a retro show, Swedefest. Two very different shows, two fantastic atmospheres, and just cracking trucks. Yeah, the standard's just phenomenal. Even as we've discussed before with the retro, where there's no judging or anything like that, the presentation that the majority, the quality that they get to for that weekend is phenomenal, really. It really is. So, yeah, September, I think it feels like I've blinked and it's gone.
It really has.
And here we are at the start of October already. And the weather's quite deceiving. It's actually, considering it's October, it's been quite nice. It's quite crisp in the morning now, but still getting up to being really quite warm around East Anglia, at least anyway,
yeah,
at the moment.
Yeah, he says down in the southeast, yeah, it's raining and quite miserable here at the at the moment. But yeah, it's been all right. It's blinked and it's been the same for me. I opted to do 2 weeks in a row in two different trucks to get them out, just to get it done and out the way, so I didn't really have to worry about any more weeks of tramping for the rest of 2025. So I finally got to drive an MAN TGX, even though it wasn't a brand new one. It was a 23 plate, courtesy of Asset Alliance and their ready-to-roll customised truck scheme, where they will supply you with a... Well, they pick out the sort of creme de la creme of the contract hire trucks that come back in that are in the best condition, and those ones are selected to receive some customization treatment, so you can have a custom truck that's ready to roll off the shelf. And they are also willing to work with you if there's something more bespoke that you want. And the first batch of trucks had been DAFs. They were all DAF XF Super Spaces. But Truckfest Scotland, I couldn't help but notice this very bright orange MAN TGX with for sale on it. So I decided to approach them and see if I might be able to borrow it for a week, seeing as I just can't get a hold of an MAN for the milk tankers. And Asset Alliance very kindly agreed to let me do that.
Excellent.
Asset have worked with G&J Shuttleworth, who do the tankers anyway. Their DAF XGs are from there, and they are now starting to customise the DAF XG. So they've got some interesting options there, whether you want a brand new truck on contract hire or whether you want to buy it, they can arrange the finance. If you're looking for something a bit older, they can sort that out for you as well. They've got such a vast range of stock. And, of course, they're going down this customisation route as well. Now, not everybody's got the time to spend going into great detail picking out this, that and whatever else for a customised bit of equipment, so you can get that very easily off the shelf courtesy of Asset Alliance. So I did a week in that, and then I did a week in Iveco's new S-Way 580,
yeah,
which is the most powerful 13 litre engine you can currently buy on the market.
Right.
That's 580 horsepower and 2,800 newton metres of torque. The previous generation, which was the 570, only had 2,500 newton metres of torque, which was the same as the 530 version. So quite a substantial jump there. And the truck also benefits, I think it's the first to have the second generation of Traxon gearbox in it.
Yeah.
Which was good because it's got switchable modes in it as well. So you can have eco, you can have normal, or you can have performance. And I tended not to bother with eco too much, but performance is certainly interesting. You'd have to be responsible with it.
Yeah.
It doesn't let it lose much power on the hills, and I'll say for it that it doesn't lose a lot of speed on the hills either. If you're in performance mode, sitting at 56 and it drops to 54, that'll go down a gear. It's very quick to react.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot going on with the S-Way under the skin. Although it looks the same externally, it's got a completely new interior in it, and I'm really impressed with how they've improved the interior. Obviously, yeah, Everything's getting digitised now. We've got to have our central digital screen as well as our digital screen for all our clocks and information. But they've also got the right amount of buttons in there as well. All your important mechanical functions are on buttons. They've gone from, the interior was just pretty much pure black in the old ones, and they've now gone more two-tone. There's quite a lot of more cream in there. So
yeah,
you've got four cup holders at the top, some nice cubby holes, a couple of deep drawers on it, lot of different spaces to stick stuff. It's also got rear lockers instead of an upper bunk, which is a first for an Iveco. And yeah, overall on the quality of it, I really couldn't knock it at all, especially for the price they're knocking these things out at.
Yeah.
As always, it comes back to the dealer backup on it as to how well they'll ultimately bed in. But that is some machine. It was managing, sitting around 10 miles to the gallon as well. It did it did get a pretty decent bit of motorway use. I've had harder runs where you're spending a lot of time in Wales going up and down the box all the time, and it would have coped with that no problem at all, although you've got to be so light and gentle on the throttle lest it wants to spin its tyres up. You know, these new trucks, you know what all these new trucks are like. They've got so much torque at such low revs that when it's damp and you're empty or lightly loaded, it's going to want to spin.
Yeah.
But, I kind of kept it in normal mode most of the time. And, yeah, very, very intelligent gearbox. Every time you were coming up to a roundabout and you had that kind of second where you're having a look and you're thinking, will I go, won't I go, and you decide to go, every time it would go with you. It wouldn't
Brilliant.
It wouldn't suddenly decide, No, no. I'm going to.
Yeah.
I'm going to decide to come a near stop here.
Yes.
Yeah, I was impressed with engine driveline. It's a twin steer midlift on it. The driving position is lower as well, which is something we've been banging on about with Iveco since the days of the Stralis, and they've gradually been getting lower.
Yeah.
And they're kind of they're getting there now. they're finally kind of getting there. Some people might find the mattress a little firm for some, but in terms of practicality, you've got a normal USB port and a Type C as well.
Oh, good, yeah.
Because a lot of manufacturers have suddenly moved to everything's Type C.
Yes.
Whereas hardly anybody has a Type C to Type C cable.
Yeah.
So I don't know where that's came from, but I thought it would be good being a top of the range model, but I think it was quite a surprise package. The top of the range S-Way. It's got an awful lot going for it. I say the only thing that's potentially going to hold that back is the patchiness of the dealer network. It depends on where you are in the country as to whether or not you can really run these on too much or not. But hopefully as time goes on, they'll be able to improve things in that respect. The MAN from Asset Alliance, although it was dressed up like some sort of flying fridge machine, middle lane freight train, it only had efficiency and efficiency plus. It didn't have power mode. MAN's power mode is only the same as normal mode on the Swedes. It's not really power mode. So I had to manually shift it most of the week, which was something which I've not had to do for a long time because it was just too... It just didn't want to move. If you're turning out a junction, it would try and change up too early, and it just didn't want to go up to the top of the green band unless you were manually shifting it. Thankfully, manually shifting was fully opened up on it. There was no restrictions on that, but at 40 tons plus, you definitely need that power mode. Efficiency isn't going to do it. Efficiency plus limits you to 53, so as soon as I noticed that, I never used it again.
Yeah, it's not got marathon written on the side. We could go a bit harder.
No, it didn't. But it just shows you the difference, because they've actually got the same gearbox in them. Well, the Iveco has now got the second generation one, but they're both Traxxons. But everything comes down to how much a truck performs is so much decided by what software it's got in the gearbox. It's the same with the DAFs. It's MAN, Iveco, DAF, and Ford in Europe that use the Traxxon. Well, MAN quite often use the Scania gearbox now. They've got the Power Lion in Europe, which is the TGX, which has the full Scania 13-litre driveline and OptiCruise gearbox in it as well. I don't think we can get that here yet.
Right.
But, yeah, it all comes down to software and how much is available to you. And, yeah, I really think everything should have three modes in it. And, you know, your drivers should be trusted. I think a couple of the power modes are a bit over the top on maybe a couple of the Swedes. But I don't know. Maybe it's designed for 65-ton sort of work, but it's only designed for short blasts. Whereas with the Iveco, you could leave it in power mode all the time and be very light on the throttle with it, and actually get a very good fuel return out of it. If you're responsible with it, If you're not responsible for it, it's going to hold the revs all the way, and it's going to go as hard as it can. So there's an element of responsibility that a driver has to have in amongst all of that, you know.
Yeah. And I guess as well, it's going to be coming down to who's actually ordering and specing the truck as well, isn't it, as to what software you're going to get.
Yeah, well, I remember at Pollux a few years ago, probably about 6 years ago now, I think it was when they'd just done the final round of updates to the old TGX, the one with the gigantic steering wheel. It was the 500 Traxxon, which transformed it. Suddenly, this was a truck that pulled very well and had a very competent gearbox in it. But then we discovered that the dealers were able to do things such as completely lock out manual shifting, which is what they did to a batch of Pollock TGXs. There was no way to manually shift them at all.
Ugh.
And I couldn't believe the difference between this truck and the demonstrator drive I'd had with one of their trainers before. And I'd actually said to Pollux, you do know that they've locked out all the manual shifting from these, because this doesn't seem right to me with the weight, some of the weights that you'd been carrying. So I don't know. I don't actually know if they were ever changed.
Probably not.
Because it's just a matter of somebody in MAN going into it and putting a laptop on it and opening up another mode.
Yeah.
It's already all in there. It's just whether or not they're going to give it to you. But anything that's got a complete lockout of manual shifting really is kind of saying to me that it thinks the driver's an idiot. You know,
yes. Yeah, we don't trust him.
Yeah, you're not to be trusted in any way whatsoever. And just sometimes so badly, you need that knock down an 11th or 10th when you're going along with like gradual hills that lead to a steeper hill. So you need to get down a gear to build a bit of momentum to get to the steeper bit. But it won't do it. It will just stay in the higher gear, trundle along, not gain any speed, and then get even slower going up the steeper bit. And all that's doing is A, slowing you down and wasting time, and B, burning more diesel. So, hey, what do I know?
So what do we know?
nobody ever asks the drivers.
No. Oh, God, though, why would you want to do that?
No, there's quite a few things that have been done to trucks in recent times where it's like, when you hear manufacturers speak, they've all got focus groups where they speak to drivers, and sometimes it's like, who exactly were you speaking to here?
Yeah, what driver? Yeah,
what driver? I don't believe for a second you spoke to anybody about this.
Yeah, I remember there was one manufacturer, I'm not going to name them, but they said that they'd spent X amount of time and money, you know, speaking to drivers and researching it, and their people have been actually out and about and sleeping in them. And when I actually had one and had a night out, and I just thought, I'm presuming that whoever researched this truck went to a hotel at night, because this bunk is terrible. You know, and I'm just thinking, it's probably just a whole load of PR spiel saying this for operators to listen to and think, oh yeah, well, the drivers are going to really, really like this truck. And yeah, I mean, it's, the majority of drivers are brand specific, aren't they? Most will have a favourite over another one. Everyone's got different opinions on what should be. So you're never quite going to get it 100% for everybody, are you? You never are. But it's just some things you look at and think, why have you done that? And I think a lot of people think that. So, it's not an easy one to get right. But just simple things, really. Like you say, USB, and moving over to USB-C, because that's the way things are going. Just little things like that make a big difference, don't they, to drivers' lives, especially when you're up the road and you don't want to be carrying more cables and stuff that you really have to.
Yeah, I don't get that. There was no warning about it either. It just suddenly happened. you got into this new truck, and all of a sudden, you're like, how do I charge things now?
Yes. And because, I mean, in my humble experience as well, I've got an iPhone, so it's Apple CarPlay if it's a plug-in. But depending on the cable you're using, quite often that will cut off. So you then have to revert back to using Bluetooth to connect your phone to the stereo. And it just, even with a genuine lead, it seems to have done this to me. Maybe it's just me and technology doesn't like me. But I'd like to think other people have a similar sort of issue with all this technology. So you need, sometimes you just need to be able to simply plug in and go from there, really.
Yeah. No, exactly. It's all this technology and stuff. It needs to have a lot of thought put into it.
Yeah.
Every truck is different. Everything's sort of got its unique characteristics. Nothing is quite the same. Nothing is quite the same. And it's a matter. So many drivers are just getting handed the keys to these trucks now. And with this latest general safety regulation, you've got all these new proximity sensors on them. You've got the speed warning sensor. There's so much going on, and people don't know what it is necessarily.
You've got, yes,
and it's, you know, there's not a great amount of information being pushed out there to say, this is what's happening with your truck, because it's only one guy is going to get the handover, probably. It's the same with the mirror cams as well. I did notice for the first time jumping between, I can't remember what it was I had before the MAN, or no, I had the Volvo, and then I had the Volvo XXL, and then I had the MAN. And when I got into the MAN, I did actually notice the blind spots the mirrors created.
Yeah.
Even though I could move my head about so I could see and everything, but I was like, oh, that's the first time I've actually, you know, noticed that as being a difference. And you've got to be careful with putting drivers between mirror trucks and mirror cam trucks, because if they've been in a mirror cam truck for a long time and getting one with mirrors, they're going to get used to not moving their head and checking for their blind spots. So you've got to be mindful of that. The Iveco's cameras were average.
I was going to say, did the Iveco have cameras or mirrors?
Yeah, considering it's a new model, they are average. Volvo and MAN have two sort of party pieces. MAN, you can see the front corners of your truck with the cameras. Volvo has a wide angle mode and a night mode. Mm-hmm. They also seem to be cutting down on the LED flicker that you're receiving.
Yeah.
You were getting a decent amount of LED flicker from the Iveco.
Right.
I would imagine with the general safety regulation coming in 2029 that it's going to... We're going to see cameras between now and then are going to be updated quite substantially. The ones that we've got now are quite likely to seem quite old-fashioned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I suspect.
Yeah, I'll tell you so. I mean, again, it's like all technology. I mean, I was just thinking when we were talking about the USB connections and things like that, I mean, the Renault iDrive at the moment is a 68 plate, so it's not 10 years old. I know it's only a fleet spec, but I can't think that there's a single USB plug in there. You've got I think there's a USB plug above my head, I think, but when you think at how quickly technology's moved along, and it's got an auxiliary option, which I presume would be an auxiliary into the back of the stereo, which means you obviously have to take the stereo out, etc. There's no actual unless it's got a headphone jack. I'm just, the thing is, it's like a lot of things, because I just drive it all the time and I don't use either, Now I start talking about it, I can't think for the life of me if it's in there or not. I'm sure it must have a headphone jack and an auxiliary plug.
It must do.
Because it's definitely got the auxiliary option when I scroll through whether I want Bluetooth, you know, or auxiliary or CD, because it's still got a CD player. The chap who I mean, I've been there nearly 2 years now, and I was only there for a week sick cover when the chap went sick, and he's left his CD. I mean, he's more than welcome to come and get his country hits CD back because it really doesn't get much playing on my behalf, I will add. But yeah, when you look at how quickly the technology has advanced, obviously Miracam has been out for a few years now, and it was fairly primitive as such to begin with.
Merck came out with it first, a little bit too early on, but Merck always liked to be first.
And I mean, their systems improved no end. I've always found that LED flicker really quite annoying, especially you struggle to see if anyone's flashed you in.
Yes.
And things, you know, simple things like that. But if that's, again, you look at your house, the quality of your TV over the last, you know, 5 or 10 years, and the cost of them has just dropped, hasn't it? You know, no doubt the technology will improve and improve. And like I say, if the MAN will show the front corner of your cab, that's a distinct bonus as well.
Yes.
Because I was thinking yesterday, one of my regular jobs, occasionally I have to go and change a trailer out of one of the sawmills, and the particular one that I do, it's a blindside reverse to put it back in. There's not a huge amount of room. Now, I've always got one, if not two people watching me, just because it is that tight without blowing my own trumpet. It's a pain in the backside because the skips that I do are alongside the trailer, and the other side of the trailer on the blind side, there's some pipe work up ahead, like at the top of the trailer, and you have to sort of get it in between the two. And by the time you've got yourself straight, that's pretty much in position. It's damn awkward. And I was thinking, if I had Miracam, I would be able to see the position of that skip at all times. And it would make this reverse a hell of a lot easier. I'm not going to say I'm going to get it in one, but I'd certainly stand more of a chance of doing so. So it would, you know, definitely be an advantage or something like that. But then, like the downside to it, unless I had like the Volvo system where I generally go to unload, I have to back into a hangar, and it is, as a friend of mine once said, because he used to do some of the work, he says, like, it's reversing into the black hole of Calcutta. It's just like a pitch black hole. And when you're backing in daylight, it can be awkward to see. And I don't know how good the Miracam system would be in helping me reverse into somewhere like that, and how long it will be before I actually get the opportunity to do so. I do not know either.
I don't know if this is going to come in as mandatory or not in 2029. We're going to find out, and it's going to be very controversial. That's for sure.
I think it'll just fade. Mirrors will just get phased out, a bit like manual gearboxes. I think they just won't be an option for mirrors. Having said that, you could always, it'd be quite easy to aftermarket fit conventional mirrors onto the side of a truck. Now, quite who would manufacture them and what they would look like.
Whether it'll be legal or not, we don't know, because of blind spots and things.
Yeah.
Moving on, part two of this podcast. It is the British special of Truck and Driver is out now, something which has been brewing for a couple of years now.
Yes.
Possibly a one-off. We might do another one, depending on how well this one is received. You don't see a lot of concentrated retro truck content, which is usually aimed at the Brits. Well, more in retrospect, I'd like to have gotten into there. I would have liked a Leyland Road train, maybe a Bedford TM. You look back thinking, oh, could have done this, could have done that. But, you know, we've got more good retro stuff coming up for you anyway across the coming issues. So
you've just reminded me, I do actually have a still working Bedford TL in my local area that I need to go and speak to. So if there is enough interest for a follow-up British one, I've got my Foden, still working Foden Wrecker article, which didn't make it. The Bedford is there.
Foden Wrecker. I'm going to check that Foden Wrecker article out. Is that hiding in? Is that hiding in your Dropbox somewhere?
If it's not, I can soon put it in there.
I don't
got
recall
the writing
seeing that. Although we were jam-packed in the end with the issue.
Yes.
We did get a lot of variety into it, and I'm pleased with the way it came out, over 100 pages. I know that we do these 132-page specials, but they tend to be backed by sponsorship of some sort, and we're not going to get any sponsorship for a British issue because there are no British manufacturers left. ERF continually ignored my phone calls and emails, as did Foden.
Yeah. Don't know why. You should have sent a telex. They might have got that.
That might have done the trick. Sent or a fax.
Yeah. But also, because I believe Heirs of Norfolk have also just put another EC back on the road for sugar beet. I will need to confirm that. But somebody did tell me. So they've got several out on beet at the moment, I believe, working daily, which is always nice to see. And I just never got the time to actually go and speak to them about their fleet. So there's another option for another British special as well.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's good. That was really pleased to get Brandon Jinks's ECX on the cover. There seems to be quite a lot of ERF ECXs have come out of the woodwork recently. ERF's last stand for the last fiberglass cab that was done from complete scratch. That cab was probably designed to have like a 20-year lifespan to it, and if it had survived, you could probably imagine it being like the Renault Range T High, where it would have had another segment into it, and it would have been a bit taller. And delighted to get John Mayall's 4525 XL, which is the ultimate of the sort of proper Fodens, 14-litre Cummins 525 with the 18-speed Road Ranger. And you got some real rarities up in there as well, with Roger Hastings and his Ford Cargos and the Seddon Atkinson as well. Yeah, I'm really pleased with the variety that we managed to get into the issue. It's interesting. There's a lot of content in there. A picture of me from 10 years ago, good grief.
I've printed that out and put in the shed to keep the rats away, Dougie, so you're a gentleman for that. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, the oldest thing we've got are a couple of Atkinsons, which are joined by an ERFEC. And on the center pages, it actually has one of Asset Alliance's custom ready-to-go trucks. That blue DAF XF, the 69 plate with Gunnar on it, is one of theirs. So there you go.
Right.
A little bit of side information. Yeah. We got Russell Oliver's fleet in there as a modern profile for that. Delighted with it. Brandon Jinks is very keen to point out just how hard it is to be an owner driver and get to, not only just to do that, but to do it with a British truck as well. Fair play to him. A lot of respect for him for running those trucks and putting that effort in to get to
I take my hat off to any owner driver at the moment, and or anybody, like I'm sure we mentioned before, Chris Paris, who's just started up as an owner driver in the current climate. I mean, I really take my hat off to you. Small operators at the moment must be really find it quite difficult. So starting out afresh, must be even more of a struggle. So and again, like I say, running an older British truck like that, you're going to be a bit more limited to where you can go, because it's not going to be London compliant, is it? So as much as you probably don't want to go there, if there's, at the end of the day, sometimes you've got to take what works available, but obviously that rules that sort of thing out potentially. So yeah, and getting parts, I'm presuming, wouldn't be too bad at the moment. But it's not going to get easier, is it?
No. I'd heard that with the Scottish ULEZ zone, you're not allowed in at all. You get fined. And then if you go in a second time, the fine gets doubled. And I was speaking to a recovery truck operator who runs a Euro 3 Mercedes-Benz Actros V8. And he's like, for all the time that I go in there, I'm as well just paying the fine twice because it resets after 6 months. So I would save much more than that on AdBlue anyway. So
yeah. Now, as a side, which has just reminded me, I don't know if any of the listeners on here are able to help. Now, speaking of Scottish recovery operators, there was one from, I believe, around the Glasgow area. Someone will probably correct me if I'm wrong, who used to own Dave Miller's old Kenworth Aerodyne Convert Scania 142 as a recovery truck, which I believe was converted by Neil Yates MYR in Kent many, many moons ago. It sat in their yard for an awful long time, looking very sorry for itself. But I heard recently, over the last couple of weeks, that it was spotted on a low loader heading south. So I'm wondering, hopefully somebody's bought it to restore it, because it's one that I've been trying to track down for the Vintage Vault up part of the magazine. And so I'd love to know, even if it's confidentially, where it's gone and what's happened to it, and try and find out, and even who, and even the previous owner in, I'll say, I'm certain it was Scotland, around Glasgow, and just see, you know, what they've got to say with it as well, if they'd speak to me. So if any listener can help with any information on that, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. So, listeners, recovery truck, Kenworth Aerodyne Converted Scania 142. You won't miss that in a hurry.
No, you won't.
So anybody knows anything about that, give Matt a shout through the usual channels, see if you can't perhaps find it. That would be a very interesting one to go and check out and see. But yeah, I mean, just to kind of to round this podcast off, you got any other business, anything you want to mention that way before we know it? It's going to be Christmas. We've only got October, November, December issue. So the issue we're working on now is the Volvo special. Then we've got the December issue, which has the Iveco 580 in it. And then we have got the DAF special, which is the Christmas issue, final one of the year. And we've got a lot of photo shoots going on in October. Some really interesting stuff happening, which I am excited about being able to get into the magazine. We've got some good everything from Scania 770s, Volvo 780s, Mercedes with our futuristic pro cabins. We've got some classics in there, a couple of lovely old ERF Fodens, DAF 2800s. We've worked very hard this summer to get as much in the bag as we possibly can. And
hopefully a 3200 as well.
Yes.
Hopefully.
And a 3200. Yeah. And hopefully a 95 as well, two trucks which have got a close relationship with each other regards DAF, with the 95 being regarded as too futuristic at the time. So they decided to bring back a variation on the 3300 and call it the 3200 for hauliers that thought the 95 was just too much newfangled modern technology.
Can you imagine a manufacturer doing that now, like Volvo coming out and saying, well, we don't know about this FH5. What we're going to offer you the version 1 FM or an FL10 as an option.
It would be an interesting one. If they offered the version 3 at Euro 6 with a manual gearbox in it and the 540 engine, they'd probably sell a few. I'd say that.
Yeah.
Any of the manufacturers did like a one-off run. But then again, the price to tool up to go and do that would dictate that the price would be so enormous that nobody would actually buy one.
So hypothetically, if we said you could have any sort of brand new variation of a truck model that's say between 10 and 15 years old, what would you probably plumb for? Because I would probably want the older DAF 95 XF or the 105 potentially. If I could have a brand new manual version of one of them, I think that's probably what I would plumb for.
Let's see, 15 years.
I know it's putting you on the spot a little bit.
15 years ago only takes us back to 2010.
That's true.
Now, I know that Graham Shuttleworth doesn't like the 510 engine in those DAFs. He says that they're quite prone for exploding, but the 460s will plod on forever. So I'm going to opt for, hold on. This way, I'm going to scan your R620 top line manual.
Right. Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, fair enough.
If I was going to have a DAF, an XF with the Superspace cab. Gearbox, please. That'll do.
I had an 05 XF Super Space Cab, like the one with the glass panel on the front of the top. You know what I mean? Before the XF 106, and I just absolutely loved that truck. It was so nice to drive. But again, the one that replaced my 09, which would have been an XF 106. Again, that was lovely as well. And I'd never really had many issues in all the time I drove them. I've been very sort of fortunate. I know the mileage I did wasn't quite as extreme as other people and the weights were not particularly high, but I always found them to be really, really reliable, comfortable, enjoyable workplaces. So that's probably what I'd plumb for. I've never really had too many big V8s or anything like that. So I dare say, something like that would be great. But I'm sure plenty of listeners have got their own ideas of what they would like to have, without going too far back in time as a modern version. So whilst we've got the rose tinted glasses out, does it?
Not at all. Right, let's round this one off. We're on 45 minutes there, so...
Fair enough. Well, just before we go, as I said, I was at Swedefest this weekend, which was another brilliant show. There'll be a report on it all going well fairly soon. And I just want to say, for not only there and also the retro show, thank you to everybody who has given positive feedback on the podcast. It's all very much appreciated, and... I'm just so glad that people listen to it and enjoy it more than anything. So, thank you very much for your kind words.
Thank you very much for, taking time to spend 45 minutes trundling down the motorway with nothing better to do than listen to us.
Thank you.
Cool. Right. All right. Cheers. I'll catch you again soon.
Lovely. Thanks, Dougie. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Truck and Driver podcast sponsored by Fortune Tyres. Fortune Tyres and International Tyres, bringing you innovation and reliability to support your operation. Learn more at internationaltyres.com/fortune or call 0121 552 6888. Drive forward with Fortune Tyres.